the new policy that will be set. I'm not a visionary, but I do believe and I have certain feelings towards things, and I do believe that there'll be some changes as far as the EPA and the environment goes, and I think it would be wise for everybody in every city to keep that in mind as we go down the road here in the future with that. I believe the cities that are sustainable, and act accordingly will be rewarded. And I'll keep it short and sweet. Also, another thing is I love the drinking water here myself, so would appreciate it kept the way it is. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Ma'am?
I'm Nancy Metella, representing Alliance for Democracy. AFD's interest in this issue stems from our concern about potential privatization of our commons, of which water is one of the most important. The typical pattern for privatization is for a city's water bureau to incur large expenses that they cannot afford in the long run. Then at some point, a private corporation comes in and offers to buy the system and run it, or just a contract for the operations, as in the case of Wilsonville. Some years ago, a Montgomery Watson employee who used to work for the Portland Water Bureau, who's already been named, was contracted by the Water Bureau to assist in setting the EPA enhanced surface water rules, including LT2, the rule that would ultimately mandate the construction of a Bull Run treatment plant, which is what we're dealing with today. And I really appreciate Commissioner Leonard's review of the contractors, and I believe someone is on our watch. Thank you. Initially, though, the rule development process for LT2 was focused on increasing watershed protection, the only true way to keep sewage and its contaminants out of drinking water. But the final rules mandated post-contaminant treatment facilities. Let's face it, watershed protection doesn't have any profit in it, whereas water treatment is highly profitable. With regards to operations, Wilsonville's mayor actually told me that they didn't have the expertise to run the treatment plant that they built 5 years ago, so they contracted it out to a private company that had the skills. That company is a French multinational corporation called Veolia, which not too long ago was called Vivendi, the oldest water treatment corporation in the world. The usual result of such a course of action is that rates are increased and service deteriorates as the private corporation drains profits out of the system.
I think I can speak for my colleagues on the issue of privatization when I say it would be over our collective dead bodies. So thank you for your testimony. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I just want to say, though, in dire economic times, people do desperate things.
We'll never be that desperate.
I appreciate that. I hope your predecessors feel the same way.
We'll all make sure they
I want to make clear the amendment that I told you I'm working on for a charter amendment includes prohibiting the water system from ever being privatized.
Oh, good.
Including the operation?
Any part, the operation or watering the flowers or mowing the lawn or washing the windows of the Water Bureau building.
Thank you. You have my vote.
Ma'am.
Mayor, members of the council, my name is Christine Lewis. I'm here today to comment on behalf of the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club has over 6,000 members in Portland City Limits in the Columbia Group, the group of which I'm the vice chair. Without a doubt, this issue is important to the club and our membership. The office has had an onslaught of calls inquiring about this issue over the past few days and the weekend, and we have been letting those folks know that they should contact your offices, since the Sierra Club thinks all stakeholders should have a voice in a discussion that affects our environment, our communities, and one of Portland's greatest assets. So I hope you've been getting lots of those calls. I urge you to appreciate this decision, the decision to commit at minimum over $1 million in upfront costs and operating expenses in the high hundreds of thousands to a filtration plant, as the significant and sizable decision that it is. Consumption of bull run water is one thing that all Portlanders have in common, and there is broad recognition of how good our water is. Bull Run meets all state and federal requirements for water quality, and we support the efforts that have been made to protect the watershed, including the establishment of the restricted area and the current investment by the Forest Service to decommission roads within the area. I'm here today to ask you to please delay your vote on 1071 as amended as you are able and allow the public process to transpire. The Sierra Club takes this issue very seriously and would like to have the time to work through our process of informing and involving our broad base of membership in order to fact find, strategize, and take an informed position alongside of your process. I hope you are willing to hear more voices from community groups, conservationists, businesses, citizens, and other stakeholders before you make the million-dollar decision to move the Portland Water Bureau from forest to faucet to from forest to filtration to faucet without further exploration of legislative and other solutions. I was pleased to hear earlier the comment that the city has allocated funds to continue to gather data for the EPA in pursuit of the variance. And finally, I'd like to thank you for your time, your consideration, and your work for all of Portland.
Great. Thank you, each of you, for your testimony this morning. Carla?
Next three are Brad Lazzolino, I believe his last name, Steve Gerulp, possibly, and Stephanie Stewart.
Mr. Lazzolino? Do we have? All right.
There they are. And they will be followed by David McCutcheon, Jane Malarkey Harmon, and Floyd Jones.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. I think Mr. Lazzolino?
No, Steve Gerulp.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Lazzolino, of course. You're
Hello.
First.
Yes, my name is Brad Lazzolino.
Lazzolino.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'd also like the opportunity to shoot a photograph of you all up close. This is about the best. Oh, I can't even get you all in at once. We'll get back to that in a second. But
just as long as the word shoot is followed by the word photograph, we're okay.
Of course. No, I commend you all. I commend the fact that we have a remarkable set of commissioners right now. And in fact, it's very comforting to hear the type of law that you want to promulgate. That is wonderful. Portland does need something set in stone that declares what the Bull Run is and what it does for the people of Portland. And it's remarkable in the world, and I think that is actually why a lot of the, shall I just say, bad actors in the EPA actually are set on giving Portland a hard time. And the reason they want to do that is because our watershed is, in fact, like she said before, a shining beacon that shows the world how to collect pure rainwater from a 100-mile or so away basin where you can collect clean water and bring it by gravity to your city. It's a wonderful system. It's extremely green. It's as if it's from some super green future. And I touch on these things in my written testimony. And basically, I just want to point out that I do want you to aggressively pursue a variance in some form, congressional or EPA, or whatever dynamic system you have to invent in order to get it. And I'll be wrapping up soon. The EPA, this is a 2006 article. The EPA plays hardball with Portland. It's a long article. It lists a bunch of the things that which are now maybe going away in the EPA, but their practices have been vindictive. And I also urge you to read the court case that set this whole thing in motion, LT2 in D.C. That was, I believe, reviewed by one judge, and in fact, he paid no attention, and he insults Portland. He pays no attention to the evidence. That's another avenue of pursuit. Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Sir.
Yes. Commissioner Leonard addressed a lot of the issues that I'm about to bring up, but since I'm here, I'd like to bring them out. My name is Stephen Gerulp. I've been a Portland resident for the past 4 decades. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this timely matter. My comments will be short. I don't know how much excellent Portland water I've enjoyed in this time span, but it is one of the things that's made me a believer in this unique region. For some reason, it seems that citizens and the representatives around the world often have to come to the defense of their water from those who would compromise or unfairly profit from it. Nor recently in the press did I see mention the apparent revolving door relationship between the Portland Water Bureau and a certain private global water corporation. Today, the very author of this billion-dollar guideline appears to be an employee of this firm. Now we are forced to comply. A pattern of conflict of interest apparently goes back a long time. Why is this the case? The City Council hearing today should be about protecting the public from these abuses where they exist, not doubling our water rates and have us sold questionable chemically treated water. The best water is minimally treated water. I and 20% of Oregonians who count on our Water Bureau expect it to adhere to the highest ethical standards. I am disappointed, as I thought we were above this. When you have a Water Bureau operating a revolving door with an outside corporation, you have already started to privatize. The City Council must find a way of correcting this ignored problem. It is not economically sustainable as we head into what is likely to be a deep, prolonged recession. Environmental sustainability is also definitely compromised with its big footprint. It opens up new rationales for opening up Bull Run for other destructive purposes. It seems to me that the commissioners will be signaling a major strategic retreat by passing this resolution, which is passed. Any thought of altering the misguided EPA mandatory guidelines will be passed, and future relief from Congress with it. With this resolution, once again, it will be the Water Bureau, not the commissioners or the citizen owners, who will be making the final determinations. It all makes me wonder about this resolution. Please do not create bigger problems by voting for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am?
I'm Stephanie. I'm a citizen, and I'm the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association Land Use Chair, and I'll take the full three if possible. The Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association, which represents 10,000 people, opposes filtration, and we greatly appreciate the amendment made today. But we also support the vigorous pursuit of legislative and regulatory reform and relief for our entire water system, including the Bull Run source water and our open storage. And because this language and this amendment still is weak on the legislative and regulatory reform, I'm afraid we'd still have to oppose today's resolution. I find the resolution before you today, even as amended, marginalizes the efforts the citizenry has made to communicate our wishes to you. We have asked time and time again for you to protect our source water and our open storage facilities from unnecessary and costly build projects. On April 11th, 175 citizens, which is a remarkable number given that it was Easter and Passover weekend, they came out to a community meeting in my neighborhood to passionately communicate that the people of Portland want protections for our pure Bull Run source water and our open reservoirs. We have an exceptionally efficient and green system with an uncharacteristically small carbon footprint. Our country needs systems like ours to propagate, and it is as much our duty as it is anyone else's to shape a political and regulatory climate in which that is possible. It is unacceptable to ignore the scientific evidence that we've achieved pure water without massive resource consumption. We've heard via Senator Merkley what the dominant argument will be from Democrats. We shouldn't let the fear of exploitation stop us from doing what is right. Our cause will be further strengthened by some of the latest data that's come in from the American Water Works Foundation research study, which was a year-long high-volume study that reportedly has found no harmful crypto anywhere in our system, Bull Run source water and finished drinking water, open reservoirs all included in that test. In recent months, more than 21 community representatives have written to our congressional delegation urging the vigorous pursuit of protections for both our source water and our reservoirs. These groups include the Portland Utility Review Board chairs Paulette Rossi and Frank Ray, PSU Capstone Water Quality Class, the 2008 winter term where they studied the LT2 Bull Run issue, ALSCO American Linen, the Craft Brewers Alliance, the Rock Bottom Brewery Brewers Guild board member Van Havig, Hopworks Brewery, State Representative Ben Cannon, the Neighbors West, Northwest, Coalition of Neighborhoods, Friends of the Reservoirs, Oregon Wild, Eastside Democrats, Alliance for Democracy, the Portland Chapter, Arlington Heights Neighborhood, South Tabor, Mount Tabor Neighborhoods, Southeast Uplift Neighborhood Coalition, as well as the Livability Committee there, the Hosford-Abernethy Neighborhood Association Chair and the Sustainability Committee Chair, as well as the Mill Park Neighborhood, the Pleasant Valley Neighborhood, and the Richmond Neighborhood Associations. That's all.
I have a question for you, because it is very rare for a U.S. senator and then someone in Senator Boxer's position to come out and publicly declare so very little chance of success through the legislative option. And this resolution speaks in very straightforward terms about seeking, you know, administrative options through EPA rulemaking and absolutely redeclares the city council sort of support for both that while leaving the legislative option on the table. Help me advise, I mean, you say you would still oppose this resolution because we're moving forward with sort of beginning the planning work in case we lose on all those fronts.
Well, I have a couple of cautions there. First of all, I would say that the language isn't strong enough in here saying that you still want the Water Bureau to be pursuing legislative and regulatory relief. I've worked on another issue this year very carefully for my own business.
It says, I mean, it's right here in the therefore be it resolved, that the Water Bureau, the City Council directs the Water Bureau to continue to seek administrative alternatives to the treatment requirements, including seeking a variance from the EPA and seeking a deadline extension from the state of Oregon and the EPA.
I don't see the definition of administrative being the same thing as legislative. I think administrative is more parallel to regulatory reform.
Right. This is the EPA side getting relief from EPA.
Is there language in here that I've missed about legislative?
Well, and so that part is okay with you, right? You still want us to pursue the EPA relief, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And your point is you want us to continue to seek the legislative relief, even though our folks have told us we don't have much chance.
Yes. Well, as I was about to say on another issue, I found that the pursuit of legislative reform actually often helps tremendously with the pursuit of regulatory reform. So I wouldn't take either off the table while you were pursuing the other.
And it is the policy of the council, if they approve this, to continue the legislative pursuit, right?
And I absolutely appreciate your passion and why you would think that. And I can only share with you my own experience, having been a legislator and actually before that a lobbyist on behalf of firefighters. The most effective lobbyists are ones that work closely with legislators and listen to what they are willing to do and not do. And when lobbyists go beyond what a legislator says they're willing not to do, they tend to then come up with reasons they can't meet with you anymore and help you anymore because they don't think you're respecting what they're telling you. And I'm not trying to teach politics 101 here, but I want to share with you the benefit of my own experience that where Senator Merkley has communicated in a letter one thing, but orally to me, communicated to me that Senator Boxler had related to her, if he brought this amendment up in a public forum, they would embarrass him. Mm. Is the word used. I want to respect Senator Merkley's honesty with me and candor, and then his offer that went on to say, however, I will use everything in my power, Randy, to help you, including attend an EPA meeting with you to make sure you get every break possible. So I appreciate what you're saying, but I have to balance it with my own experience and understanding how the natural human interaction occurs, because at the end of the day, we're human beings. Jeff Merkley's a human being. He has to work within a system as it is defined. He was given a clear message. Don't you dare even bring this up because you'll put me in the position of shutting you down. I have to respect that.
I completely understand that, and I've had my own experiences with lobbying this year, and I have found that maintaining an open dialogue with your legislators is important in achieving reform in any area, whether it's legislative or not. And I do believe that you can temper the type of legislative assistance you're seeking, and that is not the same as language that removes the legislative assistance.
You may have skills. I don't. I will give you his personal phone number and anything.
I've talked with his office.
I mean, Jeff's number and anything maybe you can think of to talk to him about that welcome to do.
I'd also say that I worked with his office a lot on another issue and that we've been told for a year that we would never receive legislative reform, but they have still worked very hard on helping us all year on regulatory reform, and it's
been perfect. I will just tell you from meeting you the first time, you have a much more pleasant representation than I do, so maybe you can get through some way that I am unable to.
And my second caution in this, to your original question to me, is that I think when you are defining here your administrative options and then also setting a time for the point at which your administrative options have failed, it seems like that should be maybe more clearly nailed down, because otherwise you're going to get into a battle with the various people with different definitions of when it is time to begin building.
So you're saying set a deadline for ourselves?
I'm saying that you should be aware. I would be nervous to have the language be as vague as this that says...
So you want us to set a deadline for ourselves? I'm not quite sure what deadline you want us to set.
I'm not asking for a deadline.
Oh, okay.
In fact, because the ordinance, the resolution says that we should seek a deadline extension from the state of Oregon, the EPA.
Right.
I wanted to just read what Senator Merkley said in his letter, which is in the record. To find a solution that is satisfactory for Portland and Baker City, which is in a similar situation, it is very clear from conversations with my colleagues in the Senate that a legislative approach has very little chance for success. I appreciate it when legislators are really clear to me, we can't do this, but we can do it a different way. So I appreciate this resolution in actually saying, let's not continue to put our efforts into that legislative solution in the U.S. Congress. Let's do what Senator Merkley suggests in seeking the variance from the EPA.
I think in stating that today, then it sounds to me like you're giving up on any hope of protecting the reservoirs, because the reservoirs' only avenue for protection is legislative.
This legislation on this particular cryptosporidium issue, we're not saying that we're never going to be seeking additional protections or other legislative solutions, but just on this particular issue.
This is a very narrow application of just to the treatment issue.
Yes.
Is that right?
Not only is right, I greatly appreciate Commissioner Fritz reading that, so that it gives me the opportunity to say that before Senator Merkley arrived on the scene, I was told that in much more blunt terms by every other congressional office and Senate office who refused to meet with me and you and tell all of you that. So I cannot begin to describe you how refreshing it is to have a United States Senator, though he says things in writing none of us were wanting to hear, that he respects our intellect enough and our judgment enough and our ability to discern information enough to tell us the truth in writing. So I hope, I told that to the Oregonian editorial board yesterday. They told me, I haven't read it, but somebody told me they actually repeated that in the editorial. Jeff Merkley deserves a lot of credit for the integrity he has brought in helping us on this issue.
And having been in some of those rooms with Commissioner Leonard and my own conversations with folks, I can bear witness to that. So thank you all very much.
I just have one more comment, and that is to thank the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association for your absolute excellence in the written presentation and in all your diligence on this. You read a list of organizations that are supporting your position, and I know from my own community organizing experience how that represents a lot of work to make sure that people are informed. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, folks. Appreciate it. Carla, the next three
are David McCutcheon, Jane Malarkey-Harmon, and Floyd Jones. And they'll be followed by Chad Crom, Catherine Knotson, and Kent Crayford.
Good morning. 1 minute to go. Glad that you're here. We just need your first and last name. You'll each have 2 minutes unless you want more, and I'll assume that Ms. Jones would like more. So we'll give Ms. Jones 60 minutes. Give her 3 minutes.
Hello. My name is David McCutcheon. I'm Portland inventor and businessman, and I wanted to thank Commissioner Leonard for his very fine work in fighting for the city and getting, you know, protection for this very precious resource we have. I just wanted to mention a couple of things that I hope will help our situation in our relation to the EPA and in our, you know, the general case that we can make. Two recent developments. One is a Supreme Court case that was decided on April 1st, 2009. It was Riverkeeper versus Entergy, and it was to decide the question about whether a cost-benefit analysis was an appropriate part of the EPA's decisions on enforcement of the Clean Water Act. And before, that was never considered to be allowable to balance out that a cost may be an unreasonable amount for the amount of benefit. But the Supreme Court said that that is allowed and it is a reasonable part of it. So in our case, it does seem to be that we are being asked to pay an unreasonable price for a very minor benefit. The second development is something that might have just happened today. A new water officer has been sworn in at the EPA, Peter Silva, and he has replaced the wonderfully named Benjamin Grumbles. So Peter Silva may be a much more sympathetic ear for our case. And so I hope that is the case. So thank you all.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jane Malarkey Harmon. I've lived in Portland all my life. My family's been here for many generations. And I feel a little bit like the movie Groundhog Day. I feel like I've been to city council meetings over the years. I've been to other meetings discussing issues around Bull Run. And I feel very worried and a little exasperated that I'm still coming to city council meetings in order to defend the Bull Run watershed. I have traveled a little bit in the world, and I am very aware of how there is no place in the world like Portland where you can turn on the tap and get water that's totally potable. I am against any kind of treatment facility or activity in the Bull Run watershed. I urge the Water Bureau and City Council to spend their time on working for a variance. I don't understand why anybody or entity would want to spend money treating our water when it is so pure. If we feel we need more water out of Bull Run, then we could try something that's absolutely free, which is conservation. That's something that I don't hear very much about in terms of public relations from the Water Bureau. Conservation, conservation, conservation. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jones.
Good morning. Floyd Jones with Friends of the Reservoirs. In March, the mayor asked if the community concern regarding corporate involvement in the LT2 negotiated rulemaking process was just a national concern or if there were local issues. Since then, you've received a document that details a series of Portland Water Bureau corporate contracts with Montgomery Watson Herza Global. Contracts related to negotiating the LT2 rule, Bull Run treatment, and Portland's open reservoirs. A few weeks ago, David Schaff, administrator of the Water Bureau, spent 2 hours arguing for a Bull Run chemical filtration plant, basing the bulk of their argument on a 7-year-old Montgomery Watson Herza-led Bull Run treatment panel. The MWH-led panel did not and does not represent the community nor community values. MWH held a 4-year contract to run the 18-month panel. This contract followed their involvement in negotiating the LT2 rule. They sat on both sides of the negotiation table. Portland brought Joe Glicker, Montgomery Watson Herza, via a separate Portland Water Bureau contract, and serving as the chair of the EPA Science Advisory Board Drinking Water Committee was Montgomery Watson Herza's national CEO, 32-year veteran, Rhodes Trussell. Montgomery Watson Herza had already decided what type of treatment Portland would build, and this was documented in their infrastructure master plan, the Portland Water Bureau Montgomery Watson Herza infrastructure master plan. We would build a chemical filtration plant, the largest in the nation. They had acknowledged in their 1980 document that the biggest obstacle to their building a Bull Run treatment plant was the community interest in preserving pure Bull Run water. Montgomery Watson Herza's grand vision for Bull Run had already been documented in the Portland Water Bureau Regional Transmission and Storage Strategy document. Build another tank at Pell Butte. They had built Pell Butte 1. Build chemical filtration and blend toxic river water with Bull Run. You have already received the Friends of the Reservoir's detailed arguments against a chemical filtration plant in our July 19th letter. I've attached for you today some additional supplementary information. As Stephanie Stewart advised you, the Portland City Council made a commitment via ordinance to pursue legislative relief. 21 groups have written to the delegation seeking protective legislation for both source water and the open reservoirs. This option should not be removed. I've spoken directly with Senator Merkley at a town hall meeting and directly with his staff. They agree that LT2 is a bad rule. The concern of Barbara Boxer was that communities that have real public health problems, for example, arsenic in their water or their watershed, might seek to attach or exploit our efforts to protect Bull Run. Well, we have science on our side. While others might seek to do wrong, that's not a reason for us to eliminate the option to do right. There's no reason that you cannot. I've attached for you a community-recommended alternative resolution. There's no reason to remove legislative language from here. It will ultimately be up to our congressional delegation to decide whether or not they pursue that. But why would we as a city council, want to shut off that option at this point? And we've heard a lot of talk today about we're not going to...
So where do you see that it's removed? I don't see
it. In the first line. Well, it is. It doesn't say. It
says, I don't see it removed.
Well, it was never put in there. It's in the 2005 ordinance, City
right.
Council ordinance, direct the Water Bureau to continue to seek administrative. You add the word legislative. Legislative, administrative. This is our proposal.
No, I got it.
Yeah.
I don't see where it explicitly removes legislative. I see
well,
it.
Well, why not affirm it? It was affirmed in 2005.
If I could finish, Ms. Jones, if I could finish. It definitely focuses on the agency path. But I don't see it removing the legislative options. We are getting back from our delegation, maybe different than you are, we are getting back word from our delegation that the legislative option has scant chance of approving. So focusing our efforts on the agency side is what this is doing. Commissioner Fish?
I just, because, Floyd, you've been so involved in this issue, I want to just make sure I understand the drift of your testimony today. We have before us an amendment offered by Commissioner Leonard that proposes a dual track. Fight the feds vigorously and seek the waiver that everybody in our community agrees we should get so that we don't have to fix a problem that doesn't exist. And in the alternative, if we are mandated to do something, pursue a low-cost option called UV. Now, with the exception of what you're raising around whether we should continue to pursue a legislative as well as an administrative fix. Do you support this amendment? And I just need clarity, yes or no, on that point.
No.
Okay. Is there any... I guess I have to... Floyd, in your July 19th letter to us, it says support UV in the alternative.
Well, of course, if a gun is put to our head, we would support UV, but there's some other problems with the resolution, and that's why we wouldn't support it. We'd like to see some additional language included in the resolution. As Regna Merritt said, that could quickly be resolved. We'd like it to say explicitly that Portland is not going to support ownership with the wholesale customers. Those negotiations have been going on since December. It's in the wholesale contract that they can own facilities. So we'd like to see it explicitly stated in the ordinance that you're not going to support that.
I do not have a problem with amending that language.
Okay.
And
I think that would be considered a friendly amendment.
I have no problem with that in language in if the city attorney or somebody.
Commissioner
maybe
Leonard,
we got the staff out here, if you could work on something that would make it explicit in this resolution that the facilities being constructed will be owned by nobody but Portland, the city of Portland.
What other amendments?
Well, the other amendment is that you not start the building process until it's brought back to council. It should not be left to the Portland Water Bureau to decide when all of our alternative compliance options have failed.
Answer that. What this actually authorizes us to do is give the engineers the direction to begin designing what it is they need to have in place by 2014. By the time they design what that would be, it would have to go out to bid. And as you know, anything that goes out to bid has to come to council to be approved for the dispersion of the funds.
And our decision-making at that point on all these contracts takes into account the bigger picture. So it isn't just that we get to decide only on contractor A or B. We get a briefing, and we make those decisions sort of in the frame of everything else going on at that point.
This resolution does not authorize the construction of a UV plant. This authorizes and provides funds that will allow the staff to begin designing, researching and designing the appropriate size UV plant and what it would look like. After that was done, we would get back here a RFP to select who would build that based on their price, and the entire council here in open session discusses that and votes yes or no. Mm-hmm.
And the other issue that Regna mentioned from Oregon Wild is the location of the UV facility. There hasn't been a big enough discussion about that issue, whether it should be located at Headworks, as is proposed, or outside of the watershed.
I think Floyd's correct. That hasn't been addressed. Early on, we did an analysis of if we had to build a variety of plants. The driving force was what would be the cheapest plant we would build, whether it was sand filter or UV system, to accomplish the goal of complying with the LT2 rule. If you have not been to Bull Run, I know Dan has, Sam has not. Have you? There is a location called Headworks within Bull Run, and Headworks is the industrial part of Bull Run, where we have a building where all the valves and electronics are located that is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by a human being who opens valves to allow water in, shuts valves to close water, monitors chlorine that's inserted into the water. What else gets inserted?
At Headworks, chlorine.
Just chlorine inserted to the water, and Ash is a semi-security person, our eyes and ears, up in the middle of nowhere. The plan is to build this system within that industrial compound, not to like go out in the middle of the woods, cut trees, create industrial treatment plant where it doesn't belong, but rather on this site that is the industrial site that trucks are parked and garages are parked and the treatment system is, and it would fit there. And the reason we've chosen to locate it there is it's downstream from the reservoir, so there is never any possibility if one of the bulbs that contains mercury and it breaks, it contaminates the whole reservoir because it's downstream from that, but that you also have a live person 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, who can sit in the room they sit in now and monitor that the system is operating the way it should. And you have roads and you have access to it for people who need to maintain it. What Floy and others have suggested is locating it outside of the Bull Run in some other remote location. The problem with that is when it's in another remote location, you have to then be concerned about security. Would anybody ever think about doing something bad to the building knowing that it's unattended, breaking into it, and doing something we may not be aware of versus having it where it is that not only has a person full-time right on spot? Since I've had the Water Bureau, we've created a full-time 24-hour person, security person, who lives in the Bull Run, who has weapons, who has emergency vehicles, that has a gate that doesn't allow people in. So we have a high level of security. It's in an area that is impossible to contaminate the water system. And the last point I would make is, without getting too technical, a UV system requires what's known as a dry well. And a dry well is basically a large, how many gallons? 100 million gallon well that, after water goes through and is exposed to the UV, goes into this dry well, because if one of the bulbs break and contaminates the water with mercury, which would not be a good thing, it would first go into this dry well and we could isolate it and get it out of there. The beauty of doing it at Bull Run is the dry well actually, what functions as the dry well as compared to having to build one, is the actual pipes that go from Bull Run to the second treatment system, which is on Lusted Hill. It would avoid us spending tens of millions of dollars to build a dry well, because those pipes act as that dry well, and we could shut the pipe down at Lusted Hill, shut it down at the treatment plant, empty the water out of the pipe, and saved ourselves tens of millions of dollars in construction costs that we would otherwise have to pay.
But I don't think you can avoid the possibility of operator error, and to say that you're going to use those pipes as the clear well and there can't be a mistake made, and then you're going to send mercury, you know, into the drinking water. It's just an issue that really there needs to be a bigger discussion.
I respect and appreciate you have that opinion. The engineers that we have, I believe, are the best in the world, and they vehemently disagree on that point.
So, but the bottom line is this particular issue, if I'm understanding the next steps on this, this sets the policy direction from council. It doesn't say specifically that the treatment plant will be as Commissioner Leonard describes or some other option. He's describing his best thinking based on staff work. This doesn't make a determination on that. But when the contract comes back, that will be when council has to sign off on, let me finish, Floyd, has to sign off on location and all the thinking that goes into backups in case of any exigencies.
But how they design, they've been designing a UV plant for a year up until December, and the effort that they're going to continue on with in terms of designing, it makes a difference whether it's located at Lusted Hill or at Headworks. So,
and that's true, Floyd. And I as much as you may not believe this, I am very much influenced by what the citizenry say. But at some point on these technical questions, I have to require the political side of me to be removed and rely on the experts. And the experts tell me, for a variety of reasons, I forgot to mention it also, by remaining at Bull Run in the Headworks location, maintains the gravity-fed system. If it's anywhere else, we have to start adding electric pumps, which adds cost to the system. I have to rely on what the experts tell me, and they tell me without question this is the place to put it. You're right. That's how they're designing it. You could come in at that time and provide evidence that that was a mistake in the council, as it did today. I'm not getting what I want today.
And but we're wasting a lot of time and money if we do that down the road. I mean, it's.
But I cannot more disagree that this is in the best. If we're going to do this, this is in the best interest of all Portlanders that it be constructed in a site that lends itself to be built at the cheapest possible, cheapest possible way, and provide maximum security for the plant.
So I think this dialogue has been good to sort of get this issue once again out on the table. Council will be making the decision when the authorization to proceed with an RFP occurs. So that's well before we actually even consider a contractor. So appreciate your conversation, your continued advocacy on this issue. Thank you all very much. Sue, hi.
Next.
Welcome.
Thank you. Next are Chad Crum, Catherine Knotson, Kent Crawford, Crayford. They'll be followed by Joe Keating, Jeff Boley, and Brian Boley.
Hey, Sandra. So this is going to work for another 40 minutes, and then at some point we need a quick bite, and we've got a whole agenda, and we got a two. So do you have a sense of how you are?
I was hoping to take them. How many more do we? We're trying to. Sue, we're trying to figure out logistics here. How many more do we have signed up?
I believe 12.
12? So I think we'll be, we can, I think we're going to be able to break at one, yeah. So if you're here for additional council items, you can come back at 1:30, you can come back at 2 o'clock. Where we will take the morning items first on the calendar and then go through the afternoon items. So if you're staff waiting for us, we're going to deal with this issue, finish it up, take a break, be back at 2 and deal with the rest of the morning items starting at 2 o'clock. Yep. Ms. Crawford, nice to see you back.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to be back. Crayford.
Sorry, yeah. Crayford.
That's all right. Good afternoon. My name is Kent Crayford, 2015 North Jansen Avenue. I am the former director, of the Portland Water Users Coalition. Unlike me, my
co-testifier is not a Portland native anymore. This jar of Steinfeld's pickles comes from Wisconsin. Up until 2 years ago, Steinfeld's pickles were made with Bull Run water, and of course they're not any longer. They were a casualty of Portland's high water and sewer rates.
Have their sales gone down?
I couldn't tell you.
I bet they have.
But, you know, I think they're symbolic of what's happened, what the trend has been among large users over the last decade. When LT2 first surfaced about 10 years ago, some of the largest users in Portland were Blitz Weinhards, Alcatel, Atachem, Sulzer, and Steinfeld's. All of those companies are now gone. And the family wage jobs, in Steinfeld's case, union jobs, 88 of them are now gone. And what has happened is that we have a shrinking rate base. And as rates go up, the rate base shrinks, more companies go out of business, more companies conserve, and so rates have to go up even higher to make up the difference. And we just see the spiral just happening again and again and again. And we need to break that pattern, and we need to do it now. And so I really appreciate the amendment. I was here to support a UV system over filtration. I think if we're going to waste money, let's waste $100 million instead of $400 million. But then again, it's a shame that we have to make that decision in the first place. And so I want to strongly encourage the city's continued effort. And I will say I feel very strongly as a member of the committee that selected the attorneys that fought our appeal before the U.S. District Court in D.C., that the city has done about everything they can to get this waiver. And I know there's nobody more disappointed in that court's decision than the Water Bureau. But now's not the time to let our foot off the gas. I strongly encourage you to keep up the effort. We'll do what we can to support you. I'd urge you to channel all the energy in this room into that effort, and I wish you success.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon.
I'll read my comments and I may need 3 minutes. My name is Catherine Knotts and I live in Southeast Portland, and I will read my comments. I support the adoption of the resolution to comply with the US EPA's LT2 enhanced surface water treatment rule. I support either ultraviolet light or direct filtration. However, waiting until after Analytical Services Incorporated completes its Bull Run water cryptosporidium study is completed as part of the US EPA administrative treatment variance application to plan, design, budget, permit, acquire land, and construct a treatment plant creates another unreasonable and unrealistic delay to comply with the US EPA's LT2 ESWTR treatment deadline by April 1st, 2012 or April 1st, 2014. There is no treatment compliance deadline in the LT2 rule beyond April 2014, and the city will not be granted a treatment deadline beyond that date. There is no acknowledgement in this resolution of the original Bull Run Watershed Cryptosporidian study done by Dr. Mark W. Le Chevalier of American Water Works Service Company, Incorporated in Voorhees, New Jersey, which was published February 23rd in Applied and Environmental Microbiology, Volume 69, Number 2, pages 971 through 979, and cited as Le Chevalier 2002 by the US EPA in its proposed and final LT2 rule, published in the August 11, 2003, and January 5, 2006, Federal Registers. The Le Chevalier Cryptosporidium Report states viable and infectious Cryptosporidium parvum species of bovine cattle and murine rodent genotypes clustered with bovine genotype were detected in Bull Run water. Of the 186 Bull Run water samples of up to 100 liters collected from the intake, 11 water samples contained detected Cryptosporidium oocysts, resulting in a 24% viability rate. The risk of infection is 1 to 45 to 1 to 95 per year versus US EPA's goal of 1 in 10,000 per year infection viability, infection rate, the infection risk. The US EPA's maximum contaminant level for Cryptosporidium oocysts is less than 0.01 oocysts per liter. Analytical Services Incorporated must demonstrate to the US EPA a maximum contaminant level of 0.00075 cryptosporidium oocysts per liter or less detected in Bull Run water in order for Portland to obtain a US EPA administrative treatment variance to avoid treating Bull Run water. The Le Chevalier report has already established the fact that Bull Run water doesn't meet US EPA's maximum contaminant level of less than 0.01 cryptosporidium oocysts per liter. Critics of treating Bull Run water haven't read the Le Chevalier report. There were no false positives, as cryptosporidium DNA was measured in all water samples containing oocysts. Dr. Le Chevalier conducted an ultraviolet light study on the same Bull Run water samples collected for his cryptosporidium study and determined an ultraviolet light dosage of 4 was effective in inactivating cryptosporidium oocysts in those water samples. This dosage allows treatment lapses 3 to 7 hours per month due to power outages. US EPA requires an ultraviolet light dosage of 12 to achieve 99.9% inactivation of cryptosporidium. Ultraviolet light is already being used to treat Bull Run water in Portland swimming pools to inactivate cryptosporidium oocysts. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Sir.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. My name is Chad Crom, and I'm a lifelong resident of Portland. I'm very passionate about the water, and I take pride in being able to probably go and travel anywhere in the world, and people that have been to Portland were famous for our water. I think you know that by now, all the testimony and your own personal experiences. I also work at Intel, and I have colleagues from around the world, and whenever I get to talking with them about, you know, the best things about living in Portland, maybe after the beer is the water, but not necessarily in that order. I'm here today to say thank you for, I think, broadening your perspective and considering other alternatives as a last resort to the filtration. What I'd like to see is really sometimes the best option is doing nothing at all. So I'd like to really see you guys go for it, the waiver. It kind of goes to, I know you've given it a great effort, but I'd rather see you spend a few more million dollars to get $100 million or $385 million in return. I guess that's the way I'm looking at it. So, and to echo other comments that have been made today, I think we have a great sustainable system as it is. And the folks at the Water Bureau, dedicated professionals, and I know they have the means and they're probably already working on alternatives, green sustainable ways so we can save, conserve, and get the most out of our water resources. So that's what I'd like to see today. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you all for your testimony. Appreciate it.
Next three are Joe Keating, Jeff Boley, and Brian Boley. They'll be followed by Doug Devers, Tom Lewis, and Steve Reinemer.
Are the Boleys related?
I'm Jeff, and Brian doesn't need to speak now.
Okay, can you call the next person?
Doug Devers, come on up then.
Mr. Devers?
Or Devins, maybe Doug Devins.
Devins, Devers.
How about Tom next. Lewis?
Mr. Lewis?
He's here.
All right. Mr. Keating.
Good afternoon, folks. Thanks for allowing this testimony to continue. The overwhelming support that we have here in terms of asking you not to proceed today is impressive on a 107-degree day out there. I have no question, okay, that the intent of everyone here is good in terms of making sure that we don't have something that hurts our water system. The problem is that we're dealing with an administrative morass, all right? And the suggestion that my group, Oregon Wildlife Federation, I'm a director, projects coordinator, a long time Bull Run activist, requires some leadership and being strong, standing up, saying no, when appropriate, but not cutting ourselves, shooting ourselves in the foot at the same time. So my suggestion is we vote against this proposal today. Let it rest. Have a coordinated approach with the leadership in this room in terms of the citizen leadership to try and put as much additional pressure in conjunction with you and our legislative leaders to change the temperature on the ground. We may be successful, we may not be, but in the same time, we won't be wasting our money and also setting a momentum in place that sometimes these things are hard to stop once you start them. And so that's my suggestion, and it'd be great to work with you and figure out the best way to proceed to. Over the years as activists, we've received the word no many, 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 many times. And a lot of those times, we've been very successful in turning them over. So thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Keating. Mr. Boley?
Yes, Jeff Boley. I'm president of the board of the Arlington Heights Neighborhood Association. And the testimony that I and my son were planning on giving is not going to be necessary because of the amendment that we very much thank you for. So what I did want to say is... since I think that the issue here is, you know, how can we most effectively persuade the federal government not to do what they seem to be determined to impose on us, that I think, you know, it is important that we at least have the legislative option as something that is still available. But from what I know about how Congress works, it seems to me that the real issue is Senator Boxer, and that whether we make any progress there is probably the relationship between Senator Wyden and Senator Boxer. So I would hope that that is being pursued. But the other thing that strikes me is I found that most people don't really understand that this great water that they have is something that, you know, they could lose. I think if the people of Portland had a much better appreciation of this, that we could get what we really need, which is enough of a public outcry about what the federal government is trying to do to us, so that we could get the notoriety that could give our case a lot more strength. So, I mean, I think of 75,000 people rallying here for President Obama. This is Portland. We should be able to figure out a way to make enough noise so that we can maybe get a 60-minute article about, I mean, the fact that we have this fabulous system and here the federal government is trying to, you know, make us abandon it. So that's a piece that seems to me is well worth pursuing. We do have a great story, and we need to get it
told. We welcome that kind of partnership and advocacy. Thank you, Mr. Raleigh. Okay. Mr. Lewis.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I, too, would like to see nothing done, nothing being best, and let nature have its way. But I do understand progress. I'm with the Centennial Neighborhood Association and also a Rockwood Water PUD board member. So I have a little wider perspective perhaps than thinking that city council rules over just the city of Portland when it comes to influence on the Bull Run and its water supply. How it affects us, the water system, even further is that in our neighborhood, we're getting the second mega reservoir. And I assume in years to come, because Centennial Neighborhood will be impacted by higher population with our land resources, that we'll be even pinched further with supporting infrastructure for the Water Bureau on Powell Butte. Our neighborhood, I wanted to speak to the fact of the economics of it, and our neighbors are of the lower economic rung. We don't have any jobs in our neighborhood. Everything goes outside beyond Burgerville McDonald's. So when water rates go up and sewer rates to follow, we're more impacted, being of lower economics, than other progressive neighbors. So I think that should be taken into account way heavily.